Hello, this is Tara, and you're listening to Tea Time with Tara. Today, my guest is Colton Petrie.
Hey, Tara, thanks for having me.
Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, well, like you said, my name is Colton Petrie. I am the host of the Just Dumb Enough podcast. I also used to be a paramedic, and I served from 2009 until just last year, where I let my license go, because it was very apparent that it was causing me some physical and mental issues that I was not addressing properly.
All right. Well, first, I'll ask you about your podcast. Tell me about your podcast.
Yeah, thanks. So Just Dumb Enough podcast. I basically just bring in people that have, you know, something to teach us, right? Either it's an interesting career, or they live in a very odd lifestyle, or they've had a unique experience. Just something that, like, if you got into a conversation with someone, you'd feel comfortable bringing up, but not comfortable talking about. Because you don't know enough about it. So you're just dumb enough to have the conversation. So I'm like, okay, well, tell us all the stuff we don't know then.
I love that. So I've actually listened to it a few times. I guess I'm doing it backwards. I actually don't know. Maybe it's the newest first. But anyway, I listened to the one with the woman who designs costume jewelry. I think that was the last one that I wound up on somehow.
Yeah, Vicky LeMaire.
Yes.
She was good. You know, I always tell people, I'm like, there's no unique order to them. It's not like I learned something in episode one that has to be carried into episode 90.
Yeah.
I'm like, just listen to whatever sounds interesting, because not everyone wants to hear about, you know, jewelry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I thought it was kind of interesting, and she's definitely a character. So that was kind of a fun part of it, even if you don't really give a crap about jewelry. Now to the good stuff.
The good stuff.
So, my first question for you is how you got into being a paramedic.
So I joined the fire service, as we say, back in 2009, and I was 16. I was still in high school. I was graduating early. But I was still in high school, and I was like, oh, this is such a cool career. I know people that work as first responders, and I'd love to get into it. And so my local department had a thing where you're like, if you're 16, you can go through all the training programs and you can join up. And, you know, it's probably a good opportunity to, like, find out if that's something you want to do. We had a lot of students come through, and, you know, I helped train people along the way, and that is what they wanted to do. And so they got a great start there. And I think I just got locked in where I'm like, yeah, I'm good at this. This is what I should do forever. And then never gave it a second thought. I'm just like, yeah, that's it. Let's go.
Wow.
And so I just invested all my time after I was like graduated early, went to an accelerated class to become an EMT, like just pushed straight through, no looking back.
Wow. That's impressive for a 16-year-old to just be like, this is what I'm going to do. That's awesome.
It was an amount of dedication that I'm not sure where I got the fortitude for.
You know, I relate to that a little bit. All right. The training. I remember that when we had first spoken that the training was pretty intensive, right?
Yeah. I mean, there is a pretty good amount of training for like just firefighting has, you know, like 6 months or, you know, some period of time where you're like, that's all you do is that training. And then, you know, my EMT went by very quickly. Like I said, I went through an accelerated course that was like 2 weeks. But then I went to college for 4 years to get a degree as a paramedic.
So do you need a degree to become a paramedic?
You do in some states.
Okay.
So it is generally like an associate's level degree. Mm-hmm. In Oregon, where I live, you actually have to have a different college degree to hold a paramedic license.
Oh.
Which is like, it's strange, but that's their way of kind of working around it, because you can take that medical, anytime you have a medical degree, and you can work it into other stuff along the way.
Okay.
So like through getting a degree and a paramedic license, I could start practicing in other ways, which is a unique opportunity. We're also kind of like, they expect more out of us in Oregon than they do right. in like California.
Wow, that's really interesting. You've talked a little bit about, or you mentioned earlier about the heaviness of it, right? The toll it was taking on you physically and mentally. What are you comfortable sharing? I want to kind of let you lead that because I don't want to push too much.
I appreciate that. No, I try to be a very open person about it. Anytime someone asks me, like, I'm willing to like pour my heart out on the table kind of a person. Okay. Because I think it's important to hear. So when people constantly will come up to me, even if I don't know them well, and they're like, oh, I heard you were a paramedic. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, do you have PTSD? And I'm like, yes, I do. Like,
they're just out with it, huh?
Yeah, because I think, if you work in a normal area like I do now, or I work like in normal civilian sectors,
yeah,
people don't have much exposure to it. And so they just want to see if it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, is PTSD really like, does everyone get it? And I'm like, well, not everyone gets it, but a lot of people do. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I'm really grateful that you're open to sharing. Do you have any really memorable things that you would be open to sharing specifically?
Sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of them. And I think that's one of those things that I usually say is like, why we get it is not usually so much one incident. Like, I've had a lot of really terrible stuff where it's like, a two-car traffic accident. I'll even give you a specific. So we had a two-car traffic accident. One of them was a very young kid who just had a very minor distracted incident, like dropped his drink, swerved across the road, hit a car oncoming. The car in the people in the other car were a newly married couple. And behind them on the road was one of their mothers. And both of the newlyweds died.
Ugh.
One on scene and one in life flight. And so it's like, this is, it's a nightmarish experience, obviously, for the kid.
Yeah.
Like, has to kind of live with that and went through all the legal ramifications of that. Both the people in the other car lost their lives as a very, fresh, hopeful couple. And then, one of their mothers was directly there to witness kind of the entire situation. But also, the rest of us that responded had to be there for that. Like, we had to be in the situation and handle and treat these people. And so that can take its toll. But a lot of it is just like the frequency with which you see these things.
Yeah.
Because, it was a very memorable scene in that I remember what happened. But, that kind of stuff happened every day or, even severe stuff like once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have stuff like that, it just kind of piles up without you noticing. And you're like, oh, I'm sure I've seen lots of calls, but I don't remember most of it. And it's like, you do. It's just buried in there. And it takes a little digging or, some other reminding incident to be like, oh, yeah, I've seen something just like this.
Ugh. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's something that people in their everyday, day-to-day don't even think about, the fact that those first responders are constantly subjected to some of the most awful things.
Unfortunately, but like a lot of people have those, they'll say it in common day, right? Like they're like, oh, I had this one really bad accident and it's kind of messed me up for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, to put it into perspective, multiply it by every time that a paramedic has ever been on a car crash.
Right.
Because they didn't go through the crash, but they do go through all of the aftermath, the treatment, the, everything else.
Yeah.
So it's like there's at least some fraction of that that's transferred over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would almost equate that to being like at a war zone and witnessing all of that. I mean, you're not just witnessing injuries and things like that, but death probably pretty frequently too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the way it gets televised, people are like, oh, everyone dies on these EMS calls and then you just bring them back to life.
Yeah.
And in reality, like most people that you get called to are not dying. Mm-hmm. Like they have, maybe they're very ill or they broke something, they're very injured, but they generally aren't at risk of dying in the moment.
Right.
But people do die in different ways, either like naturally with a heart attack or abnormally falling off a roof. Like, in either way, everyone calls 911. So, like, you see it whenever it happens.
Right. Wow. Obviously, that you have been traumatized by it. I would say at this point, it's not just PTSD, but I was just learning about CPTSD, which is the result of repeated traumas over an extended period of time. And you ultimately decided to step away from it because of that. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of how that affected you?
Sure. And I will say, like, for the purpose of education, there is also a third one that's called ASD, which is acute stress disorder. And it is what you develop in the moments after. So when you go through like a crazy bad scene, you have what they call ASD, because they're like, you have a stress disorder from what you just saw.
Okay.
And if it goes away, you now no longer have ASD.
Right.
If it sticks around, it builds into PTSD. And then if that sticks around beyond like the short term, that's where you end up with this like ongoing issue. And mine, I didn't even realize that I had a problem.
Right.
Like, I was around people that was very clear, like, they have PTSD, they're retiring from the service early, whatever it is, like, they're stepping away because I can see it happening to them. And then I got injured on the job by a patient, and I stepped away to recover. And I just started realizing, like, something's wrong, right? Like, my hands are always shaking, and I can't sleep, and I don't know what's wrong with me. And I went to a doctor that I've gone to forever, and he just very bluntly was like, yeah, it's because you have PTSD.
Like, ah, yeah, no big deal.
He's like, yeah, no, obviously, like, you've been doing this, like, how many years are you in? I'm like, I can't have PTSD. And he tricked me into the diagnosis. Because he's like, okay, well, like, let's run through this list real quick. And he got to this point where he's like, do you ever think about a call that you went on when you pass by where it happened? And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, when we were going through training, they always like address this as the slideshow, which is seeing something that's not necessarily there because you're remembering the lessons learned from it. And he goes, so you're hallucinating. And I'm like, wait, hold on. That's not what I said. And he's like, but you were going past somewhere that had a traumatic event, and you're seeing in real time what happened back then.
Right.
And I'm like trying to stare at the ceiling and think of a way to not sound crazy. I'm like, okay, what do I say that gets me out of this without ending up on like a hold or something?
Right.
And he's like, you know, that's a symptom of PTSD. Like, you have it. You just don't think you have it because it doesn't present like, you know, a wild flashback. He's like, and that's because that's not your version of it. And, you know, I thought that, like, oh, okay, it's just going to be mental. I might have these flashbacks whenever I'm like triggered by something.
Right.
And it turns out that, like, as I was trying to deal with that, I was coming through with all the other issues that I had, because I also had a lot of physical issues from just serving for that long.
Okay.
Like, the human body adapts to what it's put through. And so often you wake up in the middle of the night because there's a 911 call. And so loud alarms go off, we jump out of bed, adrenaline spikes, we run around, we get in rigs, we rush to do whatever treatment we need to do, and then we go back to sleep when we get back to the station.
Wow.
Because you're working, you know, 24 to 48 hour shifts.
Okay.
And so then it became, I couldn't sleep in the middle of the night. I would wake up and my heart's racing and I'm sweating, and like, I thought, okay, it's just a PTSD thing. Like, my wife at the time had told me, you know, you scream in your sleep. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not something I knew. Why didn't you tell me about that? She's like, I figured you knew you were doing it.
Oh my goodness.
I'm like, okay, well, I definitely didn't know I was doing that. Yeah. She's like, that's not even the worst thing you've done. I'm like, okay, well, let's deal with that later. And because there was one where, like, she said she woke up because I was crying in my sleep, and I turned in bed, like seated, turned and picked her up and cradled her like a child and wept, and then put her back down and went back to sleep. And she's like, well, that's not terrifying for me at all.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
I was like, I don't remember any of that happening.
So, my goodness. And she didn't tell you, like, did she tell you the next day or she held on to that?
No, she just like held on to that.
Wow.
I'm like, okay, well, I would have liked to have known that so I could deal with whatever that issue was.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I talked to my doctors about it and they're like, well, yes, you know, your body got very used to having this adrenaline response. So now in the middle of the night, your body produces adrenaline, which keeps you from sleeping, and it causes all these other issues that are going on, and it'll probably lead to your early death. And I'm like, cool. Can we get that under control before the early death part?
Yeah. So what other things, obviously, the adrenaline, so waking in the middle of the night, and the, I guess, are those night terrors, or like, what is that even considered?
I'm not entirely sure. They kind of just like lumped everything into a PTSD diagnosis, because I don't know if there are like standardized, I mean, I'm sure they'd have given me like 10 different disorders. Otherwise, they'd be like, here's all of your issues. But they're like, this is caused because of the other thing.
Right.
Even though, you know, like your sleep disorder would have happened whether you had PTSD or not. Mm-hmm. Because you were waking up for, you know, a decade. You were doing like the exact same thing. So your body would continue to produce adrenaline regardless of if you had, you know, a mental disorder as well. Mm-hmm. So they kind of just lump everything together like that. Where it's like, yeah, these are all your things. And they just kind of fall into the same category.
Isn't that delightful?
I know, right?
You get your laundry list of things.
Yeah, because I'm like, hey, trauma. sometimes I hear a noise and I just get real like hot and kind of shaky. And they're like, yeah, that's a PTSD incident. I'm like, but it's not like a flashback and I don't have anything pertinent in my mind that's telling me that's what it's connected to. And they're like, yeah, but it's the closest thing we can connect it to.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay. I mean, like, makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. There are so many things that we don't even realize we're being triggered by in our day to day. I feel like I'm always discovering things that I'm like, huh. I wonder if this panic attack type feeling is related to trauma, because what's happening right now, it doesn't really equate to this level of like panic or whatever. For me, I feel my heart, it feels like it's pounding out of my chest. I can't even think clearly. I kind of have learned to shut down basically when I feel really emotionally or mentally overwhelmed. I kind of disassociate, and there are all kinds of fun things that you learn the more you think about it, and the more you kind of dig in and try to work through it.
Yeah, unfortunately, and you know, everyone manifests these things differently. Mm-hmm. Like I have been walking with a friend who just like vaguely saw a little girl in a dress and just had a full-on breakdown. Mm-hmm. Where he like drops to his knees, starts crying, like that's a very dramatic response. And I don't have those.
Right.
And then there's other people who you'd never know they were going through it. Like they just don't present outwards. So it's one of those where like when there's a mental aspect involved, it's so hard to nail it down or give you a concrete definition of like, this is definitely what's happening, because you and I don't present the same. Me and my friend don't present the same. Like, it's just too varied to nail it down.
Yeah. Well, our bodies are all responding to that trauma based on, I feel like it goes, well, I guess it depends on when the trauma happens, but there's so much the nature and nurture of it all too. Have you ever read the book The Body Keeps the Score?
I haven't, but it sounds really familiar. Like someone has probably recommended it to me before.
Probably, because everybody, anytime that I have ever spoken with them about trauma, they're like, hey, have you read this book? I'm like, yes. Well, fun fact, I got it like over a decade ago, started reading it, and as many people with ADHD, I didn't finish reading it. And then everyone was like, hey, have you read this? And I'm like, well, sort of. So then I actually finished reading it. It was interesting.
You're like, it's got a great first chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's really interesting how it's not just the psychological aspect of it, but the physical manifestations, the pain that some people wind up with in their bodies. For me, I have a lot of autoimmune related things now because of that. My body basically is just so used to being under attack that it's attacking itself. So what other, I mean, you said that one of the injuries was from treating someone, from a patient.
Yeah, I had a patient with a very severe head injury.
Okay.
And so their memory was looping back essentially every 10 seconds. It was looping back to the point in time where they got injured. So they didn't remember the injury, but that was basically like their break point, where every 10 seconds they would loop back around and they would just start, you know, yelling like, what's happening? Who are you? Where am I? And, you know, freaking out justifiably, because every once in a while they'd like look at their hands and their hands are covered in their own blood.
Right.
And then they'd, you know, loop back around and now they're in an ambulance. They don't know why they're in an ambulance. And then they'd loop back around and I'm like right in their face.
In their face,
and,
yeah.
And they don't know why I'm in their face. And I'm trying to calm them down. But, you know, would you listen to somebody in that situation? The answer is obviously no. Like, right. I can't take it out on them for that.
Right.
But yeah, you know, they were tearing up my skin because she had very sharp nails. And so she was like tearing up my skin. Like, you know, I had lots of little puncture wounds and stuff from her nails, and then getting all of her blood in my blood. And that wasn't great.
Right. Yeah. So. That's terrifying, actually. All of that. I'm so sorry that happened.
Yeah. And I mean, the amount of times I've had people try and like shoot or stab me is off the charts at this point. It doesn't even like, and that's a weird side effect, but like doesn't even faze me anymore.
Wow.
Where you're just so like,
patients would try and hurt you.
Oh yeah. People all the time would, for one reason or another, either like they want to rob you and get all the stuff in your ambulance, 'cause there's, you know, narcotics and other drugs in there, even though they don't know where they are or how to get access to them. They want to do that. Or you've been called to like a spousal abuse situation and the wife may need medical treatment, but the husband doesn't want you there because, you know, he's about to be in a lot of trouble for beating his wife.
Right.
And so now he's like, he's still, you know, in that elevated point. He's ready to fight you.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like, I am not here to fight you, but I will take this outside if we need to.
Right. Is part of your training learning how to de-escalate that? Or is that something that you learn on the fly? Maybe a little both?
Unfortunately, it's not part of our training for the most part. Like, we kind of learn the things not to say, right? Like,
right.
In all situations, like things not to anger people with or things not to give people false hope with.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's ways to say things that make your answer definite and not vague.
Yeah.
And then the rest of our training where it's like, if an escalation happens, these are the drugs you're about to give them. And so I would just keep a syringe in my pocket full of like a paralytic drug. And then if things popped off, you just take the lid off that thing and stab them with it and then knock them out.
Oh my gosh. Have you had to do that?
Oh yeah. I had to do that a couple times where it's like, all right, nighttime.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
And luckily a lot of those times, like I had police response with me and they will take care of the physical escalation.
That is their, yeah.
That's part of their job and their training and not really the thing that the paramedic is supposed to be doing. But
right. Exactly.
You know, every once in a while you get a call where it's like, this doesn't sound like a violent case. It doesn't sound like anything illegal happened. So we're not sending police to you. Mm-hmm. And then you're 15 minutes from town from the nearest police officer. And you're like, okay, well, I have no one I can call. Like,
yeah,
I either got to handle this or, you know, this person's going to beat me senseless.
Wow. That's terrifying.
Certainly.
So other than injuries from people, were there other physical aspects to the, like the trauma physically affecting you?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest, like the loss of sleep was one. I had a lot of like physical issues in going on medication for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of the stuff they put me on to keep my adrenaline down also dropped my blood pressure drastically.
Oh, wow.
And so like, yes, I was sleeping through the night because I, you know, didn't have enough blood pressure to be running adrenaline into me.
Right.
But then I would get up in the morning and I would like black out and face plant somewhere and then like wake up on the floor 15 minutes later. And I'm like, I'm lightheaded and I can't move around. And I'm like, you know, bleeding from the lip or something.
Yeah.
Wow. Is this the price I pay for trying to get some sleep?
Right. Wow.
And then just like, I mean, the medication is a whole other thing, but at one point to like drive this home, how much we don't have a good treatment protocol for these things. I was on two of the exact same medication just so that they could go over the max dose of the medication. Cause they're like, well, we think it's working. We just already hit the cap. So instead I'm going to prescribe you another of the exact same medication at a different milligram. And I'm going to tell you to take two of those.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're like, here's this. It's 300 milligrams. Here's this one. It's the same thing. It's 150. And I want you to take two of those with the 300. I'm like, is this safe?
Right.
And they're like, well, how much do you want your symptoms to go away? And I'm like, well, how fast is this going to kill me if I keep taking it? Like,
right. What
balance am I striking here?
What about the side effects of that? Yeah, exactly. Holy crap. That's a lot.
Yeah. And that was like, that was one of the medications. At one point I was on like 10 of them.
Really?
And yeah. At that point, you know, I already knew it as a paramedic. I'm like, this is what we call polypharmacy. You have given me too many medications and now we don't know what's doing what or what's helping.
Right.
And so I'm like, even with the experience of knowing what it is, I just want things to go back to what I consider normal. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I'm taking 10 medications a day.
Yeah.
I guess this is fine. Okay, let's do it.
So where are you at with that now?
I am essentially medication free now as related to my PTSD. I don't really take any of the medications. Like I found a thing that works for me where I'm like, if I, you know, I exercise enough and I take vitamin D, which I'm critically low on because I live in a rainy state. You know, like that helps boost my endorphins up. I go, you know, I do therapy. I have, you know, practices where I'm like, I write things down and then try and get them out of my system. Because we used to do what were called critical incident stress debriefings. And that was like after a very major incident, you just info dump everything you knew from the call onto paper or onto someone else that was also there. And it got everything out of your short-term memory and put it way back into your long-term memory so that your brain wasn't bringing it up constantly.
Okay.
And so I just started doing some of that on my own where I'm like, okay, you know, this thing is coming up in my memory too often. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to start writing down everything I remember about it. And hopefully that will help my brain, you know, force transition that out of my short term.
Right. File it, like archive it kind of.
Yeah. Like put this in the archived folders. Don't bring it up unless it's relevant for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I think writing can be helpful in a lot of ways. I've found that, I mean, it helps me just remember to do certain things. I'm not ever going to look at the notes that I wrote, but I remember that because I wrote it down. It's very therapeutic.
Yeah. I am very much on that same wavelength where I'm like, I wrote it down and I'll remember it. But if I ever look through my notes, it's like 5 years later and I'm like, what did I write in this book?
Right. What was I writing? Yeah. Well, that's that ADHD life.
Yes. And that is the one thing where it's like, I cannot just, you know, journal my way out of that. Because I also like in recovering from a bunch of things where they're like, okay, you definitely have depression. You definitely have PTSD. And then as those things started to get cleared up, they're like, oh, you have ADHD real bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? And they're like, that's not that rare. Like one in six people that have depression also have ADHD.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, so I guess let's treat that. And that was the one that's like a major difference. Like getting treated for that one solved up a lot of the other problems where I'm like, I can deal with those things better without medication.
Right.
Whereas I cannot deal with this other one without medication.
It's so true. It's so true. I similarly had to kind of work through my trauma and my anxiety. And well, I my primary thing is anxiety, but you know, anxiety and depression are like sisters. They go hand in hand. But it wasn't until I kind of got that under control, was on the right meds for my anxiety, that it became very apparent that there was something else going on. And wow, what a difference getting on the right meds for ADHD has been for me as well. It's amazing.
Yeah. I think a lot of people probably have ADHD and don't realize it because they are kind of poorly treating the other issues that mask it really well.
Yeah.
Because like I went through, I think I've been on every antidepressant at this point, to the point that they put me on like weird antidepressants where they're like, okay, well, we don't really prescribe tricyclics anymore because they're really dangerous, but we're going to try them because nothing else seems to work on you.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So like people like me who just don't want to deal with that for so long, I'm like, I don't want to, I don't care. Like, I don't want to deal with these medications anymore. I don't want to find the one that works because it's taking too long. You know, like
I did that.
Yeah. If you just don't want to deal with it, it's really hard to force yourself to get through it. And then when you get through it, you realize like, oh, there's this other thing that I didn't know I had because I wasn't properly treating the other ones.
Yep. Oh, yeah, it's like same experience. Totally. I tried so many medications and I got so discouraged and so frustrated, and like the side effects of some of them. I mean, there was one, I think, I can't even remember at this point, but I wound up suicidal on one medication. I was like, are you kidding me? This is supposed to make my anxiety go away, not make me want to die.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of those.
Yeah.
Where it's like, they're kind of, you know, solving a solution with a hammer instead of a scalpel for the most part.
Right. Exactly. It's kind of bananas that that's how it's handled. I mean, it's hard when you have all those layers, right, to really parse out what's what. And I know that trauma and ADHD have been linked. I forgot what the word is now, the relationship between them, but people with trauma are more likely to have ADHD, and people that have ADHD are more likely to wind up with PTSD.
Have experienced it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know what it is, you know, in thinking about like treatment, I don't know why we don't, you know, every once in a while switch up the mix and we're like, yeah, we gave you Prozac and Prozac didn't work. Or like in my case, made me a little crazy because it gave me serotonin syndrome, which made me a maniac.
Oh no.
But like, okay, Prozac didn't work. How about for the second, instead of giving you an antidepressant, we just give you an ADHD medication and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because like the shift in taking those medications is drastic and instant. Mm-hmm. An antidepressant medication, and it's the same thing they use for PTSD, it's generally the same medications, like they can take, you know, 2 months to work.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you are taking most of the standard ADHD medications, you know, within a day if it works.
Yeah, the stimulants. Yeah. Yep. I remember when I first, I mean, it was only a couple months ago now that I took Adderall for the first time, and I was like, I don't know if it's working. And then it was like a day or two later where I was like, holy shit, I went through my daughter's entire bedroom in just a few hours while she was at school. And I would never have been able to do that before, but I was focused for the first time ever and was able to sit here and do something that I do not ever want to do.
Yeah. I mean, it even helps me like to relax.
Me too.
Because before I couldn't sit still. Like that's part of that ADHD. Like I couldn't sit still. Mm-hmm. So then taking Adderall, I like lay down on the couch and put a blanket over me. And I'm like, man, I am so comfy that I could actually sleep right now. And then I just went to sleep. And people are like, you went to sleep on Adderall? And I'm like, it doesn't stop you from doing that.
Yeah. That happened to me recently where I was like, yeah, I took some Adderall and then I took a nap. Like, crazy how that works, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was like all the depression symptoms and stuff keep you from feeling comfortable too. And so like, once you're like, oh, I can feel comfortable relaxing, like you kind of override the rest of it. You're like, oh, I feel better.
Yeah. And I think that when the ADHD is treated, you realize how much of for me, anxiety, but like your depression or whatever is because some of it can be because of the untreated ADHD. I mean, ADHD left untreated can take years off of your life, because of the amount of stress and mental and emotional damage that it does to us.
Yeah. I mean, there is a toll to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of those reasons, like, once you find an effective treatment, I find myself recommending it more to other people.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, before I was like, yeah, I guess, you know, so-and-so is getting treatment. Good for them. And that was kind of my, like, blasé attitude about things.
Yeah.
And then I found a treatment that worked, and I'm like, okay, people should be doing this. And so I'm yes. more likely to, like, you have the same issue I had. Do this thing I did.
You should take Adderall. Except you shouldn't take it if you don't need
it. Yeah, don't abuse drugs, kids.
But yeah, I mean, I was afraid of taking Adderall. I think I spoke with you about that the first time that we talked, that, you know, the stigma of taking stimulant drugs, but when now I know, I'm like, the fact that, like you said, you can nap after taking Adderall means that we obviously need this to be able to function properly in society and in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah. I mean, we're just kind of like, our brains are, you know, a machine that we plopped into a puppet that doesn't necessarily work all the time.
Right.
So it's like, you know, if you need a medication to help you and your machine connect better, like, that's what you gotta take. I love
that.
I love some of the, like, the comparisons that people make, especially, you know, a lot of people with ADHD, we feel very defensive about taking mm-hmm. Adderall. And so I love some of the comparisons that I see online where people are like, well, you know, amphetamine with the extra meth is a street drug. And people are like, yeah, but a human with, like, 40% different DNA is a banana, so... Is that true? And they're like, yeah, just in case, you know, you thought you weren't a banana walking around, like, you're as close to a banana as amphetamine is to methamphetamine.
Nice. Wow, that's a fun one. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I think the ADHD community is very, like, in touch with their, you know, creative side.
They're
We're willing to be a little snarkier. Uh-huh. And so, like, part of that just comes out in the way that we defend it.
yeah, that's definitely true. I feel like I've started discovering the Instagram pages and all the meme pages where they talk about ADHD. And I'm like, so wait, other people experience this too? It's not just me. Like, here I am thinking that I'm just a crazy person. And yes, I am just a crazy person, but I am also very much like other people with ADHD. So some of it is just me being a crazy person. Some of it is ADHD.
Yeah. And I mean, what a group to be a part of, because, like, I see jokes about people constantly hyperfixating on stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh God, I do that too.
Yeah.
What's like your 8 hours later,
fixation.
8 hours later, I was supposed to be doing my homework, and here I am painting. I'm like, when did I start doing this? Like, I don't remember when it happened, but I know I've been doing it for 8 hours now.
Yep. Yeah, my daughter actually just scolded me because we were coloring together. She had her iPad and I had my iPad, and I was drawing for the first time in a few years, because I'm trying to do more self-care things. And then some of that is just doing the things that I love, like drawing. And I was so hyperfixated on completing this drawing. She was like, Mommy, you are taking forever. She was so frustrated with me. I was like, come on, but look, like I was doing both things, but I was obviously just trying to get her to stay focused on her thing so I could finish mine. Bananas.
Yeah, I've heard people say, like, oh, I have a constant 30-minute reminder during the day that goes off between the hours of, like, 9 and 5 on the weekend so that I don't hyperfixate on things like that.
Really?
Like, man, what a, like, number one, it sounds super extreme. Because yeah, you're like, okay, if you're talking, like, even if it was just an 8-hour period, you're talking about 16 alarms.
16 alarms, yeah.
Like, that sounds like a lot. And they're like, yes, but it, you know, when it does go off and I am hyperfixating, I'm really glad I did it because it saves me the other, you know, 4 hours I was trying to be productive during.
Right. I mean, that makes sense. I think that we all find our ways to navigate the world. And my biggest thing right now that is I just can't seem to be on time for anything. I mean, here I was late to record. I had other things going on, but it probably, if I had prepared better, wouldn't have impacted me so much. But all of a sudden, it's like, boom, it's time to do something. And I'm like, oh shit, where did the time go?
Yeah, I am, I always say like chronically on time. Mm-hmm. Because I am never early, and that's a very specific difference. I have never been early to anything in my life, but I am always like right on the dot.
On the dot.
For whatever it's for. It's like your doctor's appointment is at 2, and at 2 I'm like running up the stairs to the office.
Yeah. Yep. That's usually me with doctor's appointments. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not really late. I'm just, you wanted me here 15 minutes early and I'm definitely not early.
Yeah, I'm not early. Yeah, I tried to set alarms, like reminders for myself now for a half an hour before something and then 5 minutes before something. But I'm learning that the 5 minutes is not long enough. So I need to do more along the lines of like 10 or 15 minutes beforehand and probably like 45 minutes.
When you figure out what the balance is, let me know because I haven't got it yet. Because I do the same thing. I'll get like a half hour and I'm like, well, I have a full half hour. I don't need to be prepped yet. Why did I even set this alarm? Mm-hmm. And then, I have something that's like right beforehand. I'm like, oh, yeah, I was supposed to be doing that thing.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? The time blindness thing is really something. I started reading about how people will, like, if they have something to do, you'll sit and just wait for that thing to happen. Like wait for until it's time to go to do that thing. Do you have to do that?
I would love to be able to do that, but my even medicated, my attention span is too short for it.
Same.
Or I'm like okay.
I almost wish that I could be like that.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, just like that seems like a normal functioning person thing to me that they can just sit and wait for something.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, okay, just 5 minutes, like even at the computer, like I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm slightly, you know, like I'm on time, whatever it is, just sit here and wait for a minute, 30 seconds, whatever it is. And then next thing I know, I'm like looking at my phone, typing something and I'm like, why am I doing this?
Yeah. I do the whole like, I notice that even when I'm listening to people, I'll grab my phone or I'll, and then I don't even realize that I'm doing it. And it's not that I'm not listening to them. It's that I'm like, oh my gosh, I have so many other things to do and
Well, and that's me. Like, you know, when I prep, I try and like have a bullet list of things here next to me where I'm like, okay, don't forget to talk about some of these. And then I'll inevitably forget to talk about them. But because I have them on my phone, which is the critical error that I have made, like I'll be looking at my phone and then I will just like swipe over to another app or to the internet and I'll just start browsing like whatever thoughts in my head. And then like you came in for this meeting and I'm like, oh, I'm not supposed to be on my phone.
Well, thankfully I think I remembered. Now I'm like, did I? And now I have to look at my notes. And guess what? My notes wasn't the first thing open.
Yeah.
Even though I started that way. Okay. Yeah, I did. I did actually. All right. I feel kind of good about that. I got them out of the way at the beginning. That's why. And it wasn't that many things.
Yeah.
Cause I figured that, well, I mean, the last time that we talked, I was like, we kind of talk. I don't need to prepare too much for this, but.
Yeah. And I mean, that's like, that is some of the beauty of podcasting too, is like, you just run into people that you can just sit and chat with.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I don't have to have like all of my prepared notes open.
Yeah.
You know, because those happen too. For anybody listening that's like, oh, it's all effortless. If only.
Yeah. I learned that the hard way. So
it happens. We all do. Because I'm like, I have notes for any eventual, like a tree an expanding tree of questionnaires where I'm like, what if the question goes in this direction? Don't forget to bring this up because you know you will because you're an idiot.
That's extra.
That's the only way my brain operates is like if and statements.
I have to plan for every possible outcome.
Yeah. Because I've had some of these where I'm talking and people are like, well, you know, how does PTSD relate to, like, you know, between you and a soldier? And I'm like, okay, I have to have that outcome. Or like, you know, how vivid does stuff bring up in your mind? And I'm like, actually, there's this thing. Like, I'll just go off on different roads based on the way people ask things that I'm like, I need to be prepared for all the outcomes.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. I feel like I need to learn to just like find that balance of preparing a little bit, but not too much, because I'll hyperfixate on that too.
Yeah. Well, and that's luckily the difference. Like when I am hosting my show, it's very easy because all I have to do is ask them questions about the thing they're talking about.
Right? Yeah.
Or I'm like, yeah, you're here to talk about antiques today. I'm just going to bring up anything that I vaguely consider collectible and let you correct me. Because, like, I mean, it's in the name of the show. I get to be dumb professionally for my shows.
Ask questions. I love it.
It's super easy. But, like, you know, when I'm coming on and I'm talking, like, to you or to other people specifically about these kind of topics, I have the luxury of being able to expand on my own thoughts.
Yeah. Well, it's I feel like what I hope anyway for most people is to just kind of go with the flow and not feel so much pressure to have to prepare and think of every possible question or outcome. I think that really the fact that you're open enough to come and share your experience about what you had been through, it's important for people to know, just for the empathy factor, right? For anybody who doesn't know. And then there's also for people who have been through it and might feel like they're alone or like they can't get through it. And the fact that you recognized that it wasn't healthy for you to continue doing what you were doing. And on top of that, invested in yourself and getting through it and working through that. I mean, that's really powerful, and it's really important for other people to know that they can get through their shit too, that there's a light at the end.
Yeah. And I think that comes down to, like, you're a very good host. Like, and so conversation does flow naturally and you ask the right questions and you bring up the right things, because, you know, not every show that I've come on to, which isn't a lot, but like not every show I've come on to asks those questions. They want, like, you know, a finer detail that doesn't lead to anything deeper. Where it's like, these things do sit under the surface. And if you don't know about them, you don't know to address them with your friends or your family or whoever it is. Like, you know, I was unwilling to talk to people because I thought it made me seem weak. And then realized that, like, connecting two people that we all have some, you know, some semblance of this within us.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I found the greatest help.
Yeah.
And so then I get to come on your show, and like, because of the way that we talk, we do get to that point where it's like, you need people around you. You can trust people and you can feel empathy and you can, like, reach out. Like, that's not just this hopeless outcome where you are endlessly suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you, because I feel like I'm so glad that you feel like we can talk. That's so important to me. I really hope to be a safe place for people, and again, to connect people, like, and to talk about, I mean, life is not easy for anybody. It's just not. I mean, unless you have lots of money, I guess maybe it's probably easier for you, but still, everybody's got their shit even then. And nobody ever really wants to talk about that stuff, all the ugly stuff, the hard stuff. It's such a shame, because any person that I've spoken with who has spoken about their trauma or their mental health, or, you know, I have friends with anxiety, depression, trauma, all kinds of fun stuff. And those are the people that are the most kind, usually the most talented and creative in some way too. But like the best kind of friends, because of the fact that, it's like, yep, we're in the same boat. You are a human being and it's okay.
Yeah, it is very much the High School Musical song, "We're All in This Together." Like, No, I mean, we are humans, right? Like, we're not supposed to do things alone like this. And, you know, we let our traumas and our suffering just kind of go unnoticed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those, I've been that person and I have seen that person, and it's miserable, like, for everyone involved.
It really is.
But you have to find that place where you are comfortable talking about it. And I think the first good step to being comfortable talking about it is to hear other people talk about it.
Exactly. Yep.
Like I had plenty of issues. Like, if you want to use me as a springboard to feel normal, please do. Like, for everyone out there that wasn't on double max medication, like, feel normal and talk about it. It's okay.
Yeah. Yep. It's true. Like, one of my friends was like, when I first met him, he was like, "I have to tell you my story. It's kind of crazy." And when he told me, I was like, "So you're a person?" Yeah. I was like, "I'm not trying to minimize how big of a deal this is for you, but it's okay because you're a person. And this sounds like just you being a human being, and it's okay." And he like couldn't wrap his head around the fact that I was just kind of like, "Yeah, man, you fucked up. It happens. Like, we've all made mistakes. It's okay."
Yeah. A tale as old as time. I feel like there should be a book that everyone just gets that says, "Congrats, you've got issues." Yes. Well, yep. We all do. Use this book to figure out what yours are, and then ask the person next to you how their workbook went.
I actually got workbooks.
I mean, they're out there. Like, helps people.
I don't use them because they're boring.
Hey, like, it's not for everybody, right?
Yeah. I tried it. It wasn't for me because it requires a certain level of sitting and focusing. Yeah. And, well, you know.
Yeah, it's not for me either, but I think, you know, like, that's good to know too. Like, just because something doesn't work for you doesn't mean you're hopeless. You're just not that person.
Yeah.
So it's like, pick something new, try it again.
Yes. I have found writing to be the most helpful, but like creative writing, not just writing about the things, art, which is why I'm really trying to get back into that. That was something that I did all the time when I was younger. And then I learned about EMDR probably 12, 14 years ago, something, I don't remember. And I tried it. It didn't feel right. I felt almost like I was obligated to feel something, if that makes sense. Yeah. And then I started looking into it again, and I found a virtual thing, and I did it once. It helped me to at least relax. And then I didn't feel the obligation to be feeling something because it wasn't a person. I thought that was kind of cool. I have to keep working at it, but there are all different kinds of things. Like, I know some people say just talk therapy, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. Have you heard of somatic experience therapies?
It sounds vaguely familiar. I'm not sure what it is.
So I'm just learning about it, so I don't know too much about it, but I believe that some of it is just breathing techniques, and that people will have these really intense reactions to just certain types of breathing for extended periods of time that can be really healing. So I thought that was really interesting because I'm like, really? Just from breathing a certain way? Apparently, yeah, people will like cry and scream and all kinds of stuff.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, like, everybody finds a thing that works well or doesn't work well for them, or works well situationally. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when we say like, oh, breathing, like meditation helps, but I have a really hard time focusing on it. So while I acknowledge it's helpful, like I also don't do it. So I'm a bad yeah. practicer.
Well, there's different kinds of meditation though, too.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. Like, I think I had such a bad experience trying to find a counselor repeatedly. Like I had the same bad experience repeatedly. Ugh. So like, I don't want to engage with it at all.
Yeah.
I'm like, people are like, oh, my counselor's the best and help me through my problems. And I'm like, I don't see one because they make me crazy.
Yeah.
Or they just quit. Like the length of,
yes,
of counselors that I've had that just like give up has become a running joke with my friends where they're like, another one quit. And I'm like, another one quit.
It's your fault. Okay. Yep. Yeah. My psychiatrist randomly was just like, oh, by the way, I'm leaving this platform. And I was like, wait, so he's like, yeah, this is our last appointment. And I was like, wait, what? Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of those, like I went to a very civilian psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And he was not prepared for the things I was ready to dump on him. And so he's like, I can no longer see you as a client because I'm having nightmares about what you told me.
Oh my gosh, really?
And I'm like, oh, okay. So do you have somebody to recommend me to? And he's like, I don't want to recommend you to anyone. I'm like, man, this is a not helpful therapy we're doing right now.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. That's awful.
He was wildly unprofessional, but
yeah.
Like, again, I think the guy was like, he's there to help practice like kids through attention spans and people with marital issues and not like severe graphic death scenes.
Yeah.
So he was not ready.
Oh my goodness. I can't believe that he was so unprofessional though. That's yikes. You're too fucked up for me.
Yeah. This is, like, this is way too much.
How is that helpful?
Yeah. That was the one that got me like, so who do I go see? And he's like, I'm not recommending anyone to you. Like, I know these people and they're my friends. Like, I don't want them to sit through you.
Oh my gosh.
Man, this is the worst.
That's almost like, how did you cope with that? Like, did you just kind of give up at that point?
I mean, initially, like I stayed away from counselors for a little while after that.
Mm-hmm.
But initially I was just like upset about it. Not upset, like sad. I was just angry because I'm like, man, I paid you for this.
Right.
Like, you know, you were at an out of pocket expense for me that I thought was going to help. And instead you just like said what you just said.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know that I trust counselors now or trust therapists or psychiatrists, any of them. And I've gone to different ones that all have like different issues. And that might just be me. Like I'm a magnet for bad practitioners.
Bad doctors.
At some point I was just like, all right, I don't think this is for me. Like,
I think
this format does not work. Let's try something else. And there's a lot out there. So it's like, even some of the newer experimental stuff, I think is very interesting, even if I have no basis for that thought.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, they're trying treatments with psilocybin and LSD and ecstasy. Like,
and ketamine.
These are the new, ketamine. Like, these are the new treatments they're trying. And I'm like, that sounds wild. And also, I kind of want to try.
Yes. Yeah. I've been reading and learning a lot more about that, especially I listened to another podcast, and of course I'm terrible and don't know the name of the podcast. I just listened to it, but my friend recommended it to me. And ever since then, I'm going to know because I'll get distracted if I try and actually find it, if I can't scroll and find it. Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers.
There you go.
It's really interesting just to learn about it and to learn about what they're doing because they're in the research of it. And it's just absolutely incredible that these things that grow naturally in some cases, like the mushrooms and even, I'm having a brain fart. Oh, weed, duh. Like medicine. It's really incredible.
When we live in kind of a weird situation here in the US, because some of these, when I started looking into them, I'm like, they're doing LSD treatments.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy. Like we're just dropping acid with our therapists. And then I looked into it and they're like, no, they've been doing this in, you know, the UK since like the 80s. And it's an extremely small dose and it's in a very controlled setting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, so we're just getting it like four decades too late to be like studying it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, we're just not utilizing things properly. Got it.
And yeah. The same thing, it's that like war on drugs.
Yep. Well, the same thing with weed. Like, you know, there's a long history as to why marijuana is so illegal that it's, you know, more illegal than other extremely hard drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there's a reason behind that, and it's not science-based.
Nope. No, it's not.
So you went from like, what, we're going to use medicinal marijuana? The whole country's going to collapse, to, you know, a couple years later where they're like, look at all the uses we've found for marijuana, and it's totally therapeutic.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, why didn't we look at this sooner? It's like, because you, literally you talking, like, had an issue with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it crazy that scientists are not the people actually making decisions about scientific things? You would think that would just be common sense, but no, of course not.
Yeah, that is a sorely lacking skill.
Yeah. I mean, even in the EU, I remember a decade plus ago when I worked in cosmetic formulation, the EU would just release these regulations and it would be like, well, why? And it's like, well, because scientists don't make these rules. So that's why. But we could go into like conspiracy theories.
Oh God, yeah. I have fallen down that rabbit hole a couple times.
I love it. That's,
yeah.
Would you ever talk about conspiracy theories on your podcast?
Oh, absolutely. I was on a conspiracy theory podcast because I was, yeah. So I went down, the long story, I went down, shorten it up, I promise. I went down to Austin, Texas, because I was working with Iconoblast, which is a couple of friends of mine that do a history show.
Okay.
And they work for Tetherball Academy Media. And one of their employees was just starting a podcast that was starting to pick up and get popular. And it's called Con Men.
Okay.
So anyone that's ever listened to the Con Men podcast, which is probably no one, but like they, all they do is conspiracies. Like Sean, the host, he's great about it, but like he just finds weird conspiracies and then talks about them. Yeah. So while I was down there, they had a drone pilot, basically. And so they were looking at the UFO footage and they're like, okay, does this seem legit? What do you think about this? And for the most part, he's like, no, like this is just an anomaly. It's not a UFO. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. And so like, because I was there, I just jumped into the show with them. So I'm like, sure, I'm here. And then we started talking about just like wild conspiracies while we're sitting there. And I'm like, how did I end up on this show? What am I doing?
Right.
But it was just like, because I'm hanging out with friends and, you know, of course we're drinking too before the show.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We did the history show at like 5 and we had a, like 2 hard seltzers. And then during the show, we had like 2 more hard seltzers and the 3 of us finished off a bottle of whiskey.
Ooh.
And then we jumped into the conspiracy show. But by the time we're in there, we're just like filters off going, you know, hard on stuff.
I think that that's the best time to talk about conspiracy theories, though.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Now I'm going to have to check out that podcast, though.
Sure. I don't remember the episode, and it might be one of the Patreon episodes. So
yeah.
You may or may not find it.
Well, still, I mean, just talking about conspiracy theories, I feel like they're just so fun. Yeah. I think that people have lost that aspect of it where they're fun. It's not to take seriously.
Yeah, they're like, oh, there's a couple conspiracies that are extremely harmful. Like, yeah, avoid those. I like the super benign ones that have no bearing on life in general.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, did you, and this is going to be weirdly on topic, did you know the Fairly Odd Parents was based on mental illness and it was Timmy swinging on and off his medications? And that's why he sometimes saw fairies and sometimes didn't. And I'm like, is that real? And they're like, I don't know, but maybe. I'm like, that's a fun conspiracy theory to be like,
yeah,
Timmy's just a kid on bad drugs.
Like, it doesn't really matter at all, yeah. But that is an interesting theory.
Yeah. If true, who does it hurt? No one.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
It's still a cartoon. Got it.
Well, I'm thinking like, what other cartoons? I mean, you think about it, there are all these, it's adults creating these cartoons. They're probably really nutty, wacky adults. So I wouldn't put it past anybody to do some fun stuff like that.
Yeah. I have heard a lot of cartoon based ones because like they're kind of fun. And then I forget most of them, but I'm like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think like, especially when I was younger, I think you're probably a little younger than me based on your timeline of things. I tried to watch Rocco's Modern Life, and I showed my son, and he was like, "What the hell is this?" And I was like, "What do you mean? I mean, I still say things from that show, but there's all this adult stuff happening."
Yeah, that one especially.
That as a kid, yeah. That as a kid, though, you don't even realize. It's just funny and weird.
I think there's a lot of that. Like, some of the best shows have, like, some of the most adult humor that you just guarantee will not translate until you are an adult. And you watch it for a second time and you're like, oh, is this what my parents were laughing at? Because
yes,
super good joke. I never would have gotten it until now.
All right, well, we've just now been shooting the shit about nothing, really.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to leave people with before we end?
I mean, if you took nothing else out of this, the biggest one I would say is just don't be afraid to share what you're going through with people.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. One sentence, just don't be afraid to share, because you won't know how much they care about you until it comes around and they, you know, you're going to realize pretty quickly that, like, they care about you quite a lot and they're willing to,
yeah,
to not just sit there and listen, but to try and help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks for having me on the show. I enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun.
I honestly would love to have you back sometime.
Anytime. I am an open book with lots of free time.
As much as I enjoyed recording it, as always, let me know what you think. I love hearing your feedback. It is so incredible to hear some of the things that have really affected some of you guys that are listening. And I'm really grateful to hear that this is helpful to anyone, even if it's just one person. Just a little update. I did have to reschedule again with my sister because my daughter was sick again earlier this week. She has been sick since last Sunday, and I felt like I was going to lose my mind. I am once again Team No Sleep. If you have seen my Instagram, then you saw how sleepy I am. And you've also probably seen me posting bullshit at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. So it's been, I mean, on top of that, it was a really hectic work week. So I feel like I haven't really been able to do much of anything, but I have been able to chat with some more potential guests. I have so many things scheduled. I'm so excited. I cannot wait to share some of these stories with you. I am thinking of doing a live occasionally just to chat with you guys and get to connect with you a little bit more. I think it's really important to actually have some kind of interaction between us rather than you guys having to feel like you're going to seek me out and send me an email. You'll just see me online every now and then and we'll talk about whatever. Check me out on Instagram, TEA time, TTime.with.Tara. In my bio is my link tree. Everything else is on that link tree, including all the places where you can find my podcast, which I didn't even know how many different places my podcast is on right now. So that is awesome and very exciting. Send me an email. My contact info again is in my link tree. The link is linktr.ee/teatimewithtara. No spaces, no nothing, just linktr.ee/teatimewithtara. Follow me on Instagram. That's probably where I post the most, so you can see what's going on. I am really trying to be better about posting about the show on my Instagram, but I just love all the shit posting I get to do. So there's that too. Like, subscribe, leave reviews, rate, all the things. I know I'm like a broken record. I'm so grateful for everyone's support. I am so excited to be meeting all of these incredible people and having these amazing conversations, making new friends all over the place, across the country, all around the world. It is so mind-blowing
really. I learned about my geography stats from my podcast when talking with Colton. And I thought it was pretty cool to see that I actually have listeners all around the world. So obviously, since I am based in the U.S., I have the most downloads in the U.S. The second highest is actually in Israel. So I am very surprised by that. So hello, my listeners in Israel, the U.K., Australia, Canada, Germany, France, and India. Thanks for checking out my podcast. As always, thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you all and appreciate you so much. Thank you for checking out Tea Time with Tara. Stay tuned and stay weird.